From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, USDA has agreed to settle a lawsuit with American Indian farmers. Australia Customs have decided U.S. exporters are dumping biodiesel in their marketplace and are imposing a heavy duty on the product. And the EU has imposed a ban on using cloned animals in its food system. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And as we close out the half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll update the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit were higher up 11.5 cents in the nearby December at $6.83. March at 7.19¾, up 10¾, and the May at 7.39¼, 10¼ higher. July up 9 cents at $7.49¼ for the soft red in Chicago. December wheat at 7:30, up 14½ from Kansas City for the hard red. December corn futures back in Chicago, $5.73½, 27½ cents higher today. March at 5.85½, up 27½, and the May at $5.91¼ a bushel, a gain today of 28 cents per May corn. July at 5.93¾, up 28¾. Next year's December, $5.32¼ a bushel, 22¾ higher. November soybeans, $12.12, up 32. January at 12.23¾, 32¼ higher. March at 12.32¼, up 32½, and the May futures at 12.35¼, up 32½. July up 32¾ at $12.39½, and next year's November soybeans at $11.68½, 21½ cents the gain on the afternoon. December bean meal at $3.37.80, up $9.60. December soybean oil at $48.47, up $1.37. October live cattle futures finished at $101.27½, up $1.60 today. October feeder cattle at $109.40, down 22½ cents. And December lean hog futures at $68.72½ per 100 pounds, finished 52½ cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $81.77 a barrel, up $2.28 a barrel. November ethanol at $2.24¼, down or rather higher, up 6¼. And natural gas at $3.54¾, that's 3 cents higher for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.25¼, up 6¼¢. And the gold futures, a finish today, $8.20 higher at $1,343.30. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now just about 153 points higher at 11,131. And the dollar, a drop of 1.0 at 77.17. The CRB index at 299. is up 6.02 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday afternoon. Calling for sunny skies, a high near 72 degrees, west winds around 17 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 41, west winds between 8 and 10 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 16. Thursday should be sunny, a high near 61, northwest winds between 8 and 14, gusting to 22. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 37. Friday, sunny, a high near 67. Winds will come around to the south by then and be at about 6 to 15 miles an hour, gusting to 23. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 51 degrees. And Saturday, a 50% chance of showers and a few thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a high on Saturday near 69 degrees. Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms continue. Mostly cloudy, a low of 54. That chance of showers and thunderstorms remains for Sunday and Sunday night, and for Monday as well, all the way through Monday night and even on Tuesday of next week, when we'll get to near 69 degrees. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tom Testdale in Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural markets, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Beautiful day. I suppose most of the field work is near done, and farmers have more time to talk to you about marketing. What have you been telling them for the day?
Well, yesterday was a busier day than today because everything I told them yesterday turned out to be at least true today. The market misinterpreted the Chinese interest rate cut big time yesterday, and they sold the commodities big time, and the dollar rallied big time, and the stock market sold off big time. And unfortunately, I would assume a lot of people sold corn and soybeans because they thought things were over with. The real thing that happened, of course, was the decoupling, letting the Chinese currency rally and the U.S. dollar dip. And as a result of that, we did see corn, soybeans, and wheat rally big time. It started late this morning and moved full throttle throughout the day.
How did the marketplace get things so wrong yesterday in the interest rate and what it might do? Because there was at least a wire service story or two that suggested that the interest rate hike by China should move the marketplace higher, but everything just bottomed out.
Well, I think the two things, there was also some lawsuits to Bank of America on some hedge fund problems, and that created a sell-off in the stock market. I think it was a function that it was such a surprise and probably surprised the Fed and some of the world financial markets big time. And as a result of that, too many people possibly were long some of the precious metals. We had seen corn, soybeans, and wheat lighten up for several days. We are still in full throttle in harvesting the Dakota and Minnesota corn crop and beans. And as a result of that, it kind of just steamrolled down. And when you see the stock market down 200 points, it created some panic selling. We do sense that the good news is that we do think the USDA crop production report will be a bushel at least lower in corn and maybe a bushel higher in beans. The Chinese soybean demand is so tremendous that it's scary good. And when you take a bushel off on the corn supply demand, it does get the situation extremely tight. The marketplace was leaning the wrong way, and the market corrected big time. I think the market got it right today. It'll be interesting to see how the market trades tonight.
When they take the bushel off, if they do, from the United States Department of Agriculture, will the adjustment be made in the western corn states as opposed to in Illinois and Indiana?
Well, when we talk, one word we do hear about is that the Iowa crop is shockingly disappointing. We spent quite a bit of time analyzing and talking to people about that situation, and there's definitely a feeling in the state of Illinois that maybe the crop is a bushel less in east of Mississippi and as well. Obviously, there's an old saying, is so goes Iowa and Illinois, so goes the corn market, and I think that's a pretty good trend. The real problem, when we talked to the Minnesota people, they said there was a lot of water damage as well, and Nebraska crop was a little smaller. I think that we have to just take it as face value, as the bean crop is fairly good. I don't think it's a two-bushel bigger crop, but that would be a surprise to me if it would be.
Do you think that the problem in Iowa, and I'm wondering about this more than anything else, if there is a problem in Iowa in their corn yields, is that they're harvesting now, I think, a 14% corn crop, and they're probably getting, I would think, a lot of shatter at the head. Can USDA first pick that up? Because they wouldn't be making that assumption unless they get the surveys correct from the farmer. And will it take longer than, for instance, the next crop production report or the final one, actually, to get the adjustment made?
Yeah. Well, there is a group of people out there that feel that if you harvest corn, under 15% or 15.5, there's a hidden shrink involved. The beautiful thing is the weather's been so marvelous, and these new picker shellers with these new platforms do such a tremendous job. I'm going to say that I'm going to downplay that one, but I will tell you this one. I've asked some of the key players in the industry about why are corn exports so lousy, mm-hmm. why can't we jumpstart the exports, and the feeling is Brazil has sold a million and a half tons of corn. That's been one reason why the exports haven't picked up yet. That will ultimately change here in the next couple of weeks. And the other one is they're sweeping out the wheat bins, and that's been another factor. Ultimately, the corn will pick up, and that's a factor. And hopefully we won't see a real surprise on corn exports on the report.
Okay, so what does Paul Cooley say about the future of corn, soybeans, and
wheat? Well, I think that once, we get the harvesting over with, and that'll probably be taking place next Monday or Tuesday, we'll see two things happen. The corn basis improve, and also the futures market improve. And I do think that a person does have to wake up to $6 corn. And on soybeans, I'm going to sit back and let these beans fully take charge of themselves, because I think the way the bean market's acting, we're going to be full of surprises in the next 30 to 40 days on just how high these beans can go, because the demand is so tremendous, and the amount of need that the Chinese are showing, it's tremendous. And it's based on livestock. Soybean crush margins are $2 to $3 a bushel. Back when we had the great grain robbery, soybean crush margins were $1 a bushel. Every soybean processing plant in the United States, printed dollar bills on one end of the processing line. And just think of the profitability over there in China.
Thank you so much, Paul, for
being
with us.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. You can hear him again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Dave Dickey is here now. He has all the details of today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. government is offering American Indian farmers who say they were denied farm loans a $680 million settlement. The two sides agreed on the deal after more than 10 months of negotiations. A hearing on preliminary approval of the package is set for October 29th. The lawsuit filed in 1999 contends American Indian farmers and ranchers lost hundreds of millions of dollars over several decades because they were denied USDA loans that instead went to their white neighbors. Hispanics and women farmers also have pending suits. Canada's Saskatchewan province is opposing BHP's hostile bid for Potash Corporation, perhaps prompting the mining giant to offer more concessions on tax revenue to get the $39 billion deal approved. The Canadian province said talks had broken down with BHP after the miner failed to meet its demands. BHP, the world's biggest mining company, offered Saskatchewan only a fraction of the $2.9 billion over 10 years that the province is seeking to make up for expected revenue losses. BHP says it is confident about addressing the tax loss concerns and is working with the Canadian government's Investment Review Division on making additional significant undertakings to get a deal across the line before a decision is due on November 3rd. The Australian Customs and Border Protection Agency has decided to impose an interim duty of 40% on biodiesel imports from the United States after determining that U.S. exporters have been dumping the product in Australia's domestic market. Officials say the 40% duty is necessary to prevent material injury to the Australian industry occurring while its investigation continues. Until last January 1st, U.S. biodiesel producers received a $1 per gallon federal subsidy, and it is that government support that is at the center of the Australians' complaint. The European Union has announced plans to temporarily ban the use of animal cloning for food production while allowing imports of food derived from the offspring of clones from the U.S. and elsewhere. The Commission said a temporary 5-year EU ban on cloning for food production was justified on animal welfare grounds, but said banning imports of food from the offspring of clones was unnecessary and would disrupt global trade. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming as MP3 files for you to listen to directly from your computer. Now, up next, you know the tax credits for ethanol blending are set to expire at the end of the year. Washington is considering what to do next. The agricultural economists at the University of Illinois have been toying with some new ideas. I'll have a report on some possible alternatives to the current blender's tax credit.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
We'll start by using some familiar terms for farmers to outline the current blender's tax credit and proposal the University of Illinois has been exploring. Ag economist Scott Irwin says farmers can think of the current tax credit as something like their direct payments. And the proposal we'll discuss here as a target price and a deficiency payment. The payments are awarded to the blender. That's the entity that puts the ethanol into the gasoline. The policy Irwin and his team developed and are exploring would key off the price difference between wholesale gasoline and ethanol.
The rule that we took a look at was to say, okay, subtract the price of ethanol from the price of gasoline, and that gives you a measure of the incentives to blend ethanol. When that number is positive, that means ethanol is cheaper than gasoline, and so blenders will want to include it in the gasoline at the retail supply. When that number is negative, that means that the price of ethanol is higher than the price of gasoline, and you wouldn't want to use ethanol in terms of just the basic market economics. So we key our rule to zero. In other words, whenever that margin is negative, meaning that they otherwise would not really want to blend ethanol, that's when the blender's credit kicks in.
That credit would max out at 45 cents a gallon, which is the same as the current and soon-to-expire blender's tax credit payment. It could be less than that or nothing at all, depending on the math. It's a simple, time-tested solution that Irwin says actually works in practice, and it saves taxpayer dollars.
And we tested it, and we were able to show that, for example, since 2007, our estimates are that the current fixed rate policy would cost around would have cost the U.S. taxpayer about $15 billion, and our proposed variable blenders credit would be about $2.5 billion.
That's a $12.5 billion savings. Now, clearly, says Irwin, the calculation does not account for behavioral changes by the industry. Still, it's a starting place. Probably, he admits, the biggest question from the corn producers is, would such a dramatic drop in government support to the blenders affect the price of ethanol and corn? He doesn't know the answer yet. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's a Wednesday afternoon time to talk with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Scott Butcher is on the phone line with us. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Good afternoon, Todd.
So yesterday, I suppose you might have been busy with phone calls and a bit of panic. How about today?
Yeah, today's been kind of the same thing, only not panic, the opposite of that. We have, you know, had a lot of people calling just wondering what's going on, basically.
And did you have any good insight for them?
You know, I don't think we do. I mean, I think we've got the same issues that we've been dealing with. I think we've got the yield issue in corn that's going to be hanging over our heads for a while. But as far as having a good, clean answer for somebody, you just really don't.
Did your bases hang on and follow closely with what was happening in the futures market?
Yeah, we're basis unchanged this evening.
And for beans as well?
Yes.
Okay, and then producers, I'm certain, are done or awfully close to done, if not done, with both corn and soybeans in your area. Have the bin doors closed and locked up at this point?
Yeah, for the most part, everybody in our area is pretty well finished up, and, you know, they're looking to, you know, at least December, maybe after the first of the year before any kind of move.
I suppose that means the basis is pretty tight at this point. What kind of basis do you have for corn and beans?
Right now we are 17 under for corn and 40 under for beans.
And if you look out across the Midwest, what do you see in terms of basis? Like if you go further out west, are they tight? They're still in the middle of the harvest season, or are they just a little looser than you folks?
Yeah, I think things are a little looser, especially as you get out into Iowa. You know, I think they have the same yield issue that we have had, but, you know, I think basis definitely is a little bit wider.
Are expectations for when producers might open the bin door up? Do you think it'll be a normal year for them?
I think it'll be earlier than what they even anticipate. I mean, I really think that the processor is probably going to try to force their hand in November and even December to try to get bushels moving this year.
For both corn and beans?
Yeah, I do think so.
And what are your bids for the day?
Right now we are 5.56 for corn and 11.72 for beans.
Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Scott Butcher is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Wednesday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. You can hear him again if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a couple minutes, I'll return. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Brandied Fruit Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1803, the U.S. Senate ratified the Louisiana Purchase. The acquisition included the entire western Corn Belt and most of the wheat-producing states in the U.S. Thomas Jefferson decided to make the purchase because he felt uneasy about France and Spain having the power to block American trade access to the port of New Orleans. In 1930, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes premiered on NBC Radio. You may not know this, but the sleuth had a green thumb. In his last story, we learned that though Holmes is crippled by occasional attacks of rheumatism, he has, for many years, lived on a small farm 5 miles from Eastbourne, where his time is divided between philosophy and agriculture. And in 1970, Norman Borlaug received the Nobel Peace Prize for his contribution to the Green Revolution. An American agricultural pioneer, he increased grain production throughout the Third World by perfecting and introducing new strains of wheat and rice crops. And he conceived the World Food Prize, awarded each fall for improving the world's food supply or access to it. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City is with us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I hope you're doing the same.
I am doing very well. Tell me about the weather forecast for the Midwest to begin with, especially the western Corn Belt where they're still in the midst of harvest.
Well, it looks like we've got a storm system that's going to be developing out in portions of the Central Plains as we go into Friday and Saturday, and that will run across a big part of the Midwest, including the Western Corn Belt, as we go forward into the weekend. Everybody is going to get at least a little bit of a shower or two, but it looks like the system is being downplayed by the midday model runs here today, which could be good news for the harvest that's still underway out there in the western part of the region. However, on the other side of the coin, there's a lot of wheat country across the Midwest and the Plains that's really becoming more and more dependent on this particular storm system to bring in enough moisture so that planting can resume in some locations, and in other cases, enough moisture so that the crop will germinate and emerge properly. We're really getting quite dry in many areas from the Central Plains into the heart of the Midwest, even parts of the Delta, of course, in the southeastern states. And we're putting a lot of pressure on this one storm system because it's the only one that seems to be set up to bring rain across some of these areas. The storm is probably going to produce anywhere from a tenth to maybe three-quarters of an inch of moisture, which would be great if we get the higher end of that range to occur in hard red wheat country. Some of the driest areas out there in the plains right now include some of the most important wheat-producing areas, including the southwest and south-central parts of Kansas, western Oklahoma, and the Texas Panhandle. But this midday model run did reduce rainfall in all those areas here on this latest run. That doesn't mean we're not going to see the rain. It is still going to rain out there. It's just not going to be as healthy as what was advertised earlier. But back in the Midwest, after we get into the weekend, we will see showers move across a big part of the region. It will delay some of our field progress. There will be a stronger cold front that will come in right behind this, which will take place probably on late Sunday night, more likely Monday into Tuesday. And as that front races across the Midwest, bringing in much cooler air, it will also set off some additional rainfall. So in answer to your original question, there will be some delay in field progress across the Midwest this weekend and early next week as we get involved with these two weather systems.
Wheat seems to be a particular problem for the planet. In the southern hemisphere, we'll harvest in Argentina and Australia. How are those crops faring?
Well, Western Australia, which produces about 40% of their wheat crop in a normal year, has had a terrible drought this year and has seen that Western crop reduced down to at least half of what it was originally, and there's some speculation that it might end up being about a third, 30 to 40% of normal. So that's a pretty significant hit. But at the same time, the eastern parts of Australia have had tremendously favorable weather, and their yields are way up. So the Australia impact will probably be a little less than what everybody might have thought otherwise, just simply because we do have such a good crop coming out of the east. In Argentina, there was a lot of planting that was not completed this year because it was dry during a part of that planting season. But the crop that was put in the ground has seen some improving tendencies in recent weeks with timely rain occurring to support the crop. So Argentina will probably have a little smaller crop than usual, but not a disaster. But it, again, like you said, it's a contributing factor to the lower ending stocks worldwide, and so we'll need to continue watching Argentina. They've got a ways to go with their wheat crop before it'll be pulled in.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That's the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.